Amazing. Right, we're off, I think. How long are we here for? 6:30. Supper at 6:30. 6:15. Okay, so we just got an hour, basically. Let me just give you my history so that you know where all this is coming from. I've never been a full-time youth worker or children's worker. I ran the youth work at a church in Wimbledon for about 15 years. Lots of involvement in camps and so on. Had a break raising family. So I've got three young children now, 10, 8, 6. And 3 years ago, I started teaching Sunday school at my church because I thought it was time to get some experience in children's work. So my youth work experience is old. My children's work experience is new. My parenting experience is only 10 years old at the most. But in the middle of that confluence of things, I've developed something to say about this issue, which may be new to you, may be old to you. It may be shallow and irrelevant to you, which I apologise, but let's feel free to discuss this. All I'm talking about is what I've discovered, what I think works, where I think the Bible might be pointing us, and a few steps that we can take in that direction, which are constructive. So, here's the first question, first statement really, which is this. John Donne, paraphrasing John Donne's famous poem, No Man is an Island, I want to say that no child is an island complete of itself, and I want you to think of one child that you have in your group. Can you just do that? Think of a child. Think of one typical child or untypical child that you have in your group. Now, can you answer for them, or what do you know about their parents? Are they parents of single family? Are their parents Christians or not Christians? Is one a Christian and one not a Christian? Are the parents together but dad's away a lot? What's going on in their parents' household? Their siblings, brothers and sisters, do they have some around? Are they a lot older? Are they a lot younger? Their school. Just talk about them to the person next to you. What you know about this child. Just talk about that child to the person next to you and discuss what you know about them, if anything. It's a seminar. It's supposed to be interactive.
I was thinking of boy in church, and I guess I happen to fit one I think I know very well. So I know his parents are both Christians. He's Tom. He has three siblings, all younger, so he's the eldest, is about 8. And I know that I did marriage confession with parents, so I had to pick for one over there. Yeah.
I have a little girl called Georgia, who is year 5 now, and is keen as mustard and a mad potter. She's got a very complicated family. Her mum had an overdose when she was young, and she was fine, but her brother had to be weaned off. Drugs, older brother still has had severe childhood trauma showing itself now, but she has been, her and her two big brothers have been adopted by their aunt, who is now mum to all purposes, and but older sister still was not adopted on the way off the road in Wales, and there are two other children from that family who are now older brothers and sisters, and she goes to the local junior school, which is up the road, but is not one involved with
Okay, I'm thinking of David, who has a disabled sister, and he himself is disabled, got a gammy leg. Don't know that much about his parents, actually. Don't know what dad does. They show up, they're very concerned and interested. I don't know how to talk about much else about them. So I chose someone that I deliberately didn't know anything about. So the next question to ask really is, how does that information or lack of information influence either the way you treat the child or how you teach the child or how or what you expect of the child in your... So, does it have any influence at all? Should it have any influence at all in the way you relate to it? I suspect that it probably does in the way you relate, but can you just give some thought to how that knowledge affects your relationship as a teacher or Sunday school leader or whatever? Does it or doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. Mine really does. So the fact I know the parents well means I know they encourage me to discipline him because they feel he's on the edge of control. So I think I'm harder on him than I might with others. I think it means that because I know him, I think I love him more than I would know some others. Yeah. And I find him more endearing than I probably would if I didn't know his parents.
Yeah.
And it means because I think he's a Christian, it means I try to encourage him rather than beat him up.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's really interesting. I think I treat him completely differently than I would a kid at school who I didn't know, who didn't come to church, and I'm looking at his parents.
Yeah. Is the same with you, Robert?
Yeah, I was just thinking as you were saying all those things, that's absolutely right. In the same case for me, I would treat her differently, knowing the support at home, knowing the freedom, knowing that I'm freer to explain the gospel very clearly.
Yeah.
Without a problem coming from home,
because they
and the implications of that, because the mum does, the father doesn't. Not that I duck the issue with the non-church, but I'd be much more careful in perhaps in explaining it. Maybe that's wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, how about you?
I think knowing the background, there are certain difficulties in the his behaviour is not very good, this what is that? And you try to sort of bring him under control, but in the back of your head you're always thinking, well, he's not got much discipline at home anyway. And it does affect the way you work. I find it incredibly irritating, but his home life is horrendous.
Yeah. But you're actually more able to put up with it, aren't you? Because you know that.
I didn't know his home like I do. You know, I'm probably much
more. Yeah. It's interesting, the same with me and David, because I know that this kid does huge amounts for his disabled sister. You know, he's almost like a parent with her. It's interesting thinking about this because I think I'm much more lenient on him. He starts sort of charging around and going mad, and I think, poor kid, he just wants to charge around. I don't mind that.
And I think I would have gone in his position.
Exactly. You want to cut him some slack because you know he's got a hard life, isn't it?
Yes. Kids have an inbuilt sense of fairness. We're treating children differently because of those sort of things. I think they pick up the wrong way. We need to be consistent.
You're right. Just to tell you what it's not
about. Well, that seems to have worked quite well as a discussion generator. You've been having lots of... what's interesting that's come up for you in that discussion? Is that an area of discussion that you've never kind of quite thought about before? What are some of the things that you treat people differently because of? Go on.
It was interesting when you thought about actually how you teach. I think... From my experience, especially with children, there's an element to which a lot of the Sunday school teachers in my care and oversight, we follow the book. And so it's more how you treat them in the context of the world we're teaching this week, it's week four of Click or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So especially for that age group, particularly, there is no tailoring of specific
content.
Very little one-on-one other than coming alongside.
Yeah.
Often reactive as a result of issues with behaviour, etc.
Yeah. Unless you happen to be teaching Ananias and Sapphira that week and you knew that one kid's parent had dropped dead last week or something like that.
Yeah.
That would obviously be a key
more
thing.
In the caring and the understanding and the kind of going, she's off the wall this morning.
Yeah.
But anything could have happened over the weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's true as well. I think it's easy to just generalise with the children in terms of application when you're just in a small group and chatting. But what I find the help in that is if I'm consistently teaching the same group of children, because I'm knowing them better, I feel more convicted about differentiating the kind of application and the kind of question I'm going to ask. It's going to be different to this child compared to this child.
You simply can't. You go mad if you, trying to think everybody's life situation tailor the whole thing.
Yeah, it's like that, is it? But I think you begin to realise that actually this would be a better question for this person.
Yeah. Any other observations come up? Yes.
What came out really was if say they're from a non-Christian background, so you know that it's when maybe with a parent's Christian, then. When we come out with something, sometimes you can't help but sort of be like, wow, like we're able to come out with that with their own thinking, don't you mean?
Or sometimes ask the question, if David, who's from a Christian family, comes out with that, I kind of know that because of his parental context and the fact that they're teaching him at home and so on, I know that what he means by that. But if another kid comes out with it and talks about God, I might actually have to, log, what does he actually mean by God from his background? If his parents are, say, Jehovah's Witnesses or from some Freaky Friday religion of some sort. Sorry, I cut across you there, yeah. But, you're absolutely right. When a kid gets it, who's from outside, as it were, it's a glory moment, isn't it? You're jumping up and down. You see the penny drops, fantastic. Any other perspectives that people seen there? It's just something to note, isn't it? No child is an island. They're part of this whole web of relationships that we're born into. And, one of the failures, I guess, of our kind of evangelical pietistic history is that we've been very focused on the individual and the individual as a person and their relationship with God, and there's been less of an understanding or concern really for the whole relationships that they're in, and of course the Bible's got something very interesting to say about that. But first, before we move on, I want to tell you the good news about working with children and parents. And the good news is, you've won. Even before you start, you have won with the parents. You're in credit at the bank of parents because you have taken their child off them for an hour. They are in your debt. They may not show it. They may not have the gratitude to express it in the right kind of way, but basically you've got credit with them because you're looking after their kid on Sunday morning for an hour or whatever it is with your club. Now, I think that that's an enormous thing, and it's credit that is not just to be enjoyed. I think, once we think this through, we'll work out that it's credit that we can do something with. We can spend it in a really productive and constructive way. You look after their kids. If you're doing your job well, they like you and you love them, the children. It's free. Another great thing in favour of your job and your role as a Sunday school teacher. And I hope that you care. And I hope that the kind of interaction you may have with the parents, which may only be minimal at the moment, like here he is, pick him up. But I hope that the kind of interaction that you have shows that you care. And there are some very simple ways to win even more, to extract the credit dollar out of the parents. And they are things like... It's pathetic as a parent, you know, but when someone tells me that my child has done something good, I just behave in this ridiculous way like a little puppy. I roll over like I've had my tummy tickled and, you know, you could do anything with me. If someone told me that Jennifer played brilliantly in her lesson, even if it was a guitar lesson that she only just managed to strum a chord in, but if someone praises my child, it puts me on cloud nine as a parent. And if when one of the children in your group is being picked up, if you can simply say to a parent as they pick up, John was brilliantly behaved today. Doesn't matter if they completely, you know, messed up the lesson or didn't understand it or were asleep during the talk. If you can say something positive, you build up credit with a parent. She drew a fantastic picture today. You tried really hard at that, didn't you? Look, you're gaining credit with the parent. And it's a really important thing to do, I think, simply just to build trust and a sense of relationship and to communicate the simple fact that you care about the kid. And it absolutely costs nothing. All you've got to do is just think of something to say, and when they're being picked up, say it. Anything positive whatsoever. Anything of praise, anything of interest, any feedback on what's happened in the lesson. But there is, that's the good news, that's the great news. There is a downside, and I put a question mark out after this, the bad news, because I'm not necessarily sure. This is actually a sort of CD of strange pictures. Does anybody know Pete Jackson?
Yeah.
Does it look like Pete Jackson? It's just off an American CD, but it's Pete Jackson. I don't know why that is. What is the bad news? And the bad news is that Sunday schools are not biblical. Sunday schools sort of happened by accident, didn't they? If you go to Embankment Gardens, just by on the Thames, just by Waterloo Bridge, there's a big statue of a man there called Robert Raikes, who was the founder of the Sunday school movement. And Robert Raikes basically set up these schools to teach reading, writing, arithmetic to street urchins who never got any formal education. And somehow these Sunday schools, which took off as an idea for practical, formal, moral, spiritual education for children with no education, have been folded into the system of church as we have it today, so that kids get carted out, leaving parents alone in church to have an adult sermon while children get taught separately. And it's a system that we're all used to, but it's a bit of an accident of history. But when you actually sort of delve into the scriptures and ask the question, who is it who is supposed to teach children, you learn that it's supposed to be the parents. It is the parents who have, under God, the spiritual responsibility to teach their children, to raise them, to nurture them in the fear of the Lord, to bring them to know God. And that's expressed in many places in the Old Testament, not least these famous verses in Deuteronomy 6. These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts, impress them on your children, talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. That's Deuteronomy 6:6-7. And there are whole areas in the Bible. The first third, really, or quarter of the book of Proverbs is an extended teaching session from a parent to a child about wisdom, growing in wisdom, not only in practical things, but also in moral and spiritual things. And it is the parents who God will hold ultimately responsible for, if you like, the shape or the character of the child that God has given to them. So Sunday schools are really unbiblical. That doesn't mean to say that they're not practical. Doesn't mean to say that they're anti-biblical, but it's certainly not the pattern that, if you just started with the Bible, would we have invented Sunday schools today? Well, that's up for a question. That would be a very interesting discussion to have over supper, wouldn't it, whether you do that. So when we get to your job, what is a Sunday school teacher? And I don't know whether your church is the kind of church that has job descriptions for people who work in children's ministry at all levels. But what are some of the things from Timothy and Titus about someone who's in leadership in the church? What are some of the things that a job description will have to involve?
Husband of but one wife.
Husband of but one wife, yeah. No? Okay, anything else? Godly, sober, yeah. Anything else?
Able to control the children.
Yes, thank you. Practical skills, that's good for a parent, yeah.
Able to teach.
Able to teach, thank you. Okay, so those are some of the... Sorry, was that...
Outstanding.
Yeah, of good reputation, thank you. The definition will have to involve their ability to teach, the teaching role. It's the thing that the New Testament descriptions of elders has in common. The character, the moral character of the person, and the fact that they have a living faith in Christ. So any definition of a Sunday school teacher would have to involve those three things. But it cannot, I don't think, and I think scripture backs me up on this, cannot be complete without a reference to or a mention of parents. Because if it's the parent's role to raise the child in the fear and knowledge of the Lord, then the Sunday school teacher, for all his gift of teaching, for all his moral character, for all his living faith and trust in Christ, has to be someone who works not independently but in cooperation or in partnership with parents. So this notion, this idea that the Sunday school is a parking place for children where they happen to get a bit of teaching, I think is incomplete and unhelpful at the end of the day. So I would suggest that one of the first roles in getting this, steps in getting this thing right, is to develop a mission statement for your Sunday school or a job description for your Sunday school leaders. And these are mission statements that aren't just bits of paper on the wall or something they sign and never read again, but things which you train them and teach them to be part of their thinking, and also structure your program so that the aims are part of the programming and how you put the whole thing together. But it needs to involve the fact that you are in partnership with parents. So here's one I wrote earlier. It probably needs working on. This Sunday school aims to support parents in raising their children to know and love the Lord through the appropriate teaching of God's word and the God-honoring example of the lives of the leaders. It's the kind of idea of a statement which puts the things in the right order. What is my job? It's to teach the Bible to these children, to help the parents in their raising these children. So I am working in partnership with the parents. And do you see how that perspective changes the whole way you look at what happens on Sunday morning or at the club? Suddenly it's not just you with screaming kids for an hour in the morning. It's you with a parent who's, yes, dropped them off, but also a parent who will pick them up at the end of the time and spend the rest of the next week with the child before you have another chance to input into the child. And there is this whole sort of black hole we have in children's ministry, which is the child away from my club, which is part of our responsibility or duty to somehow be involved with. Feel free to shout out a question, make a statement, throw a hymn book at any stage.
In that, you have something very similar to the whole church.
I'm sorry, say again?
You have something very similar to the whole church, couldn't you? Because you are there to raise yourself to know, to raise each other to know.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It's part of our fellowship together, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. So let's think a bit more about what Planet Parent looks like. And this is where it gets sort of slightly complicated. But I hope, for all that, interesting. What are the categories of parents you might be involved with? Well, here's church. And you have some parents who are churched, in other words, who show up on Sunday, and you have some parents who are unchurched. They're outside the box. How many people have children in their group whose parents are not part of the congregation you're involved with? That's great. And just tell me how they end up there. Friends bring them along? Yeah. Yeah, family, distant, more distant relatives, yeah.
Kids out playing on the streets and they want them to get bored.
Really? So they show up to make your life difficult?
Yeah, and they succeed.
Great.
After school clubs.
Yeah, after school clubs, lots of...
It's just invitations at school dates.
Yeah.
That's a great way to meet kids.
Mm. I come from a family of church-sending parents. You know, the church-going parents. I have church-sending parents. They stayed in bed Sunday morning, kicked us out and shoved us down the road to church. So, there you go. Well, there are more important subsections of that, because you've also got Christian and non-Christian. You've got churched Christians and church non-Christians. I also suspect that there may be some unchurched Christians around who would have their kids in Sunday school. I had a couple of kids from an unchurched, I believe, Christian family in my Sunday school a couple of weeks back. He was a guy who was in my youth group years ago who has gone off the boil and disappeared and married a Christian girl, I think. And the whole thing's just drifted. They were back visiting. They normally avoid church like the plague. But as often happens, mum with the children starting to ask questions said, "Let's take them to Sunday school." I saw him fleetingly at the door and he turned and ran. Mum came in with the kids. And had the most fabulous time. Interestingly, the thing she commented on most was that there were two blokes running the Sunday school. And it was the thing which most impressed her, that there were a couple of guys running the Sunday school, and that it was, you know, it's not always brilliant, but that morning it just happened to be absolutely brilliant. So Dave Fenton's been doing something on the prodigals. That was a very exciting moment for me, because I can suddenly see how it might be possible that the gospel could come back into that household, and a guy I've known for years and have prayed for years could be brought back into things. Very exciting moment. Christian, non-Christian, churched, unchurched. Sorry, that's the division there. And here's another important division. Onside and offside. What do I mean by that? In other words, parents who support and encourage what's going on in your Sunday school. Parents who are pleased that their kid is going to Sunday school. Parents who are not pleased. Outraged, in fact, that their kids are going to Sunday school. Now, of course, we all want all the parents of our kids to be in that quadrant, don't we? We want them to be in church, we want them to be believers, and we want them to be on side with what we're doing. But the reality is that there are 6 categories there. And all of you will have to deal with those other 5 categories of parent in some way or another. And one of the exercises, we won't have time to do it now, I don't think, one of the exercises that you might want to do as a result of this is simply to sit down with those 6 categories and try to maybe write a few names in it and ask yourself the question, how do I move this person closer to the top left-hand box? How do I move this parent from offside to onside? What's my strategy going to be? How do I move this person from an enthusiastic non-church person to someone who might just dip their toe and come to church occasionally? How do I help this person who's been a regular for years, through the contact I have with them and their child, to start to see the spiritual issue and to be challenged, to be converted, to come to Christ? Really worthwhile doing, because, you know, we've done an exercise, No Child is an Island, how your ministry relationship with the child is affected by all those things. Same holds true for your relationship with the parents, doesn't it? You're going to be bending over backwards with the offside, non-church, non-Christian person to be squeaky cleaner than clean and make sure that there is absolutely nothing other than the gospel that could offend them about you and what you do in the Sunday school. You're going to be wanting to make sure that their kid has the most brilliant time possible and goes home enthusiastic about the group in a way that perhaps you might not with the onside church Christian parent, because you kind of think, well, they're stuck here anyway, and you know, the parents will pick up the pieces if I make a botch of it for whatever reason. Worth just doing. Why don't you pick a square and just turn to someone next to you and just see if you can think of a person, who a parent of one of the kids in your youth group who fits that square, and ask, what's the opportunity there for me having some influence on moving that parent a step closer? Is that too hard? No.
Me thinking of Michael, who I think became a Christian just before Christmas through one of our midweek groups, and brought his entire church to our carol by candlelight.
Is it entire family?
Entire family. Okay. What did I say?
Church.
Yeah, I meant entire family to our church, carol by candlelight. So, and they were sitting there, and Dan in particular was really listening, and we're just kind of building relationships slowly. He's still keen as mustard, and keeps asking for Bibles and Bible notes and things, and now we're trying to sort that out for him. His parents were fairly positive. Just, so they're kind of unchurched, non-Christian, but seem to be fairly on side.
Yeah.
And intrigued. So I might kind of pop around with the parents and just try and encourage them back.
Important theological question there, isn't there? I mean, you 2 steps, you either think, let's get them church, they'll hear the gospel, they'll get saved, or do I just go around and offer to do Christianity Explored? You know?
The church in Dagenham, I don't know what I was talking about, the church in Dagenham is thinking about that. And I think particularly for areas like Dagenham, maybe partly yours, that people are more reluctant about church than they do about Jesus.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're trying to offer them Jesus, not church. And that is true, isn't it? Because church workers, we're fanatical people going into our church building,
job meetings.
Yeah. Jesus is saying that's not actually our goal. It's hard to work out what our goal is.
it's not that hand down. Particularly because I'm very well dad, is very, I mean, our church is quite eclectic in its kind of types of people, but he's very kind of start of the year, carpentry kind of manual guy, and we don't have many people quite in his box, so
I'll say this from the front in a second, but it's interesting, isn't it? If it's non-Christian dad, he's a non-Christian stepdad, and non-Christian mums who have the spiritual responsibility for their children, it does actually give you a very obvious and natural intro. You know, I think it's potentially quite non-threatening, isn't it? Look, you know, I'm teaching Sunday school, but I think that the responsibility to raise this child in a spiritual sense belongs to you. Now, is there any way I can help you do that? And the first step towards that is obviously if you want to teach a child and raise them to know the Lord, first step obviously, if you know the Lord, how can we help you to do that? I mean, it sounds quite cheeky, really, doesn't it?
But there is also a step before, combining your earlier point, which is to say your child is taking an incredible interest in the Gospel of Matthew. Mm. He's really loving studying it.
Yeah.
And I think he really wants to know more about Jesus. Isn't that amazing?
Mm.
Because, you know, as a parent, I think his natural reaction is to say, wow, they don't take this interest in maths or whatever at school.
Exactly.
And you'd hope the conversation may come up.
And it's following kind of individual gospel. And they said he took Luke home and they read it together as a family.
Awesome.
So I've given them a bit of space, but I need to
Try
and see them. But I like that. I like that a lot.
How about you? Pick a child, pick a parent, pick a box.
Most of the children's club come from a
Christian family.
And any interactions to get any of the parents to anything that has anything to do with church is often, it's not impossible, it's very common.
Yeah.
And, the parents are friendly on the doors, most of them are on the side because they say they've got kids from that. But that is where they seem to get to start. We haven't really come up with a strategy to bridge that gap. We do special family services with kids.
Does that bring them out, or sometimes?
It does drag them out, two or three times a year, and then it's into my kitchen. Because it's very obviously a problem. You know, children's work in the church is quite big. The numbers of children is huge, but the number of parents actually come in is small. It's definitely something that needs addressing, and any help would be brilliant.
Your point on parent credit, that is a big thing. And that is something you can use with people who aren't Christians. So last year, a guy told me that after their holiday club, they had an awards evening. And he said every parent wants to see their child get an award. So it means that if you give every child an award, every parent will come. So I mean, things like, I mean, any organ, a performance, a Christmas nativity, every child wants to see their kids sing, perform.
The most successful technique we have for doing that, is that we have the children we did a play with them at the church. They were brought to watch and fed on the team. The parents had to come to see the play they kept them there to get older. So we kicked them with the children for them, bro.
But it begs the question, doesn't it? What do you do with them on site? What's the, you know, it's Tim's question, isn't it? Does the activity head in the direction of making disciples, or doesn't it? No. I mean, there is value, of course, in getting people on site just to break the threshold, the footfall barrier. But interesting. Let's bring it all together. Okay. It seems to have generated some interesting discussion, and I'm sure it's discussion that you could carry on elsewhere. What were some of the issues that you came out with in that? course, one of the questions is one of the. Sorry, go on.
It's just actually been meeting the parents, because if they're just coming in documented, they haven't been taken away.
Yeah.
The parents have actually seen.
Yeah.
It might be, because it might be dealing with someone in the hall in bed, and it's already on by the time.
Yeah, I think there are manpower, timing, and you know, programming issues about that. And very often, if you're doing a Sunday morning Sunday school thing where the parents are in church, it's a fight, isn't it? And kids are finishing stuff off, and you know, the kids who are have got accountants for parents won't leave the desk until they've finally finished in precisely filling in the sort of tiny last bit of their drawing, and you've got others going wild. So it's a bit of a scrum, isn't it? But having enough people, having enough time built in, so that you can. Actually have contact time with the parents. You know, Michael, that may simply be a matter of making sure that you are at the door and someone else is managing the chaos inside, so that when the parents do show up, I suspect health and safety and child protection and all that now demands that we are much more careful about who comes in and children sort of allocated to parents rather than just everybody flying out kind of thing. But that in itself is an opportunity, I suggest, to do. Yes, sir?
Yeah. That's been one of the most fruitful things I've just found, is to try and meet up with parents, to go to their home and to meet up with them to say, just love to hear a bit more about your family and how can we help you more here at the church.
Yeah.
And right, a bit like a kind of Richard Baxter model, where you go around to meet people in the area.
Have Baxter soup with them. Yeah.
Absolutely. But I just found it really helpful, because we plan to try and do that over a year, but it's kind of pitched a bit, but just keep going. But it's actually really fruitful. So you can ask questions like, you know, tell me about your family, you know, do you have any kind of Christian convictions, how much they influence the way you parent.
Yeah.
What more can we be doing for you to help you, kind of thing, and which I could never do on a Sunday morning.
No.
And it actually says, loud and clear, we do care about you, and what can we do to help you?
Yeah.
I'm sure there are other approaches, but from experience, I just found that really helpful.
Okay. Other issues that generated for people?
Quite positive. Quite positive. I wouldn't go to see a single mum by herself. So I would go, if I said I would go with my wife Lisa. But people were really positive. As long as I didn't get a big clipboard out and say, you know, ask this question. Just an informal chat over coffee. People seemed quite positive.
And people are absolutely delighted when you take interest in their child, aren't they? Yeah.
I think so.
And what reinforces this actually is school reports. Because school reports no longer say anything about children, either positive or negative.
Yeah.
This child has achieved the task set out in Key Stage 4 or whatever. And you know, they're just not only they're boring, but they're, you know, you just throw them away basically when you get them. So having someone who is actually, you know, enthusiastic about the child, not the parent, that teachers aren't, but enthusiastic about children, and is prepared to say, really good at this, struggles with this, doesn't she? How can I, you know, is there any help you can give me, and how I can, you know, deal with this problem? And what you're doing subliminally is you're showing you're on the parent's side. You're already in partnership with them on all kinds of levels, and if you can then move into the important level, which is the spiritual level, how can I partner you in your responsibility to raise this child Christianly? It's bingo, isn't it? And, I mean, it might be cheeky to suggest it, but Ayla, have you ever done that?
Yeah.
You said to non-Christian parents, yeah, it's your responsibility to raise this child spiritually. How can I help with that?
Yeah, in our place, there's a lot of mix, so Christian marriage and non-Christian.
Yeah.
And
something else just say, it's just interesting to see how they're kind of relating with a conviction about Christ and what he is, and their different approaches to the parenting. It's quite hard for them to be able to say, actually, the key thing to do is to, you know, the Bible would say this, God would say parent like this. But it's, you know, I think it's a first meeting with these folk, and it's an ongoing relationship.
Yeah.
And I just want to put the marker down and begin to try and work on them. But what I'm saying is I've started that, but then it's dipped, and we need to go back and do that. I think because it's to kind of move all the way through meeting everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm not speaking as an expert.
Yeah.
So we've started.
The harvest is ripe and the workers are few. I mean, I think this is a problem with all of these areas. When you suddenly start to focus on them, you suddenly see, you know, possibilities and avenues of opening up and areas of responsibility that you might kind of theoretically have as a worker. And then you say, okay, I'm going to blow up because I can't do that, or I can't give myself to it. But sorry, anybody want to add anything at that point? I think one of the interesting things we discussed here was we automatically assume that the way for a non-Christian, unchurched person to get to here is by this route. Yeah? We get them in church and then we get them converted. Yeah, or we get them on side, we get them in church and then inside on church, get them converted. It's an assumption that we oughtn't necessarily to make. We're just wedded to getting people to our meetings, aren't we? Because we think that's the way God works, through old buildings with pews and organs.
I play football with the dads on Friday night.
Yeah.
Just to make a point anybody who's new in the church gets invited to it. And also a whole bunch of dads linked with one of the local schools. And it's been interesting to see, you build up a relationship. And there is a sense of familiarity. As if you start playing football with them on a Friday night, you then see them drop off their kids and pick them up at clubs. And then you hit the holiday club, kind of a big celebration at the end of it. And you feel like you can go up to them.
Yeah.
And I think that there is real strength in being loved for who they are and being part of a group of people who say to them, rather than, you can't join us unless you're a Christian. But I see the strength in that, and I've worked on that particularly with just using football, something that they've really enjoyed.
Yeah.
Something that I've enjoyed on a Friday night.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that has been a strategy. But as you say, I guess it's not the only strategy.
No, it isn't. And, the family I was thinking of, my daughter's taken her best friend Ellie to the Bible club at the school she goes to, and the parents would not be seen, you know, not only are they hostile, but they're aggressively anti-Christian, and are horrified that their daughter wants to go to a Bible club, but because they're so right on PC, they simply can't say it. and it's hilarious. It really makes me. I just want to wind them up all the time about it. I know that's completely, completely counterproductive, but I just want to wind them up about it all the time. How am I going to reach Alan and Kat? It's not going to be through church. It's going to be personally outside a church context. Interesting things to think about and work through there, just some of those ideas. It's always good to look at what this could look like if we were in the perfect place. Not because we want to beat ourselves to death with an impossible mountain to climb, but just because we can set our sights on something. And then be realistic about it. That's what I want to do just for the last few minutes. If we were taking this seriously, what would our program look like? Well, it would be integrated with what's happening at home. In other words, parents would be involved in some kind of teaching of their children at home, reading the Bible, and what we do on Sunday wouldn't be something that was outside of that context. They might be reading Luke's Gospel at home. We'd be studying a bit of Luke's Gospel to reinforce and help what is happening at home. There'd be some kind of continuity between the program. There'd be reinforcements of the message in both. That's simply to say the home is reinforcing what's happening in our groups, the groups are reinforcing what is happening at home. Here's another scary thought. Parents will be involved on Sunday. That's quite scary for parents, and I have to say the most difficult thing I have found about running my Sunday school or being part of my Sunday school team is my own daughter in the class. Because, well, it just doesn't work. Maybe it's just her, maybe with one of the others it would have worked, but she is, you know, the most difficult one to control. I'm sure it's partly because I'm there. But if parents are responsible, then there should be some involvement somehow. It's been interesting hearing Tim talking about parents involved in youth group, parents of teenagers involved in youth group. And the reason often it hasn't worked in the past is because there's simply no expectation. We've bought into the separate teen identity culture that means that they go to a youth club to chill out of the context of, and away from their parents. And parents have been happy to do that as the kids have been happy to do that, yet it's been intriguing that Tim said that once you've got this established, that parents are involved in the team, kids just think it's perfectly normal. Interesting, isn't it? And here's the other bit. Teachers involved at home. That we're not just a once a Sunday meet, because our job is about raising children in the fear and knowledge of the Lord in partnership with parents. It stands to reason, doesn't it, that we should have much more involvement week by week, whether that's simply, you know, bumping up for birthdays or going round for dinner or dropping in for a cup of tea or being on the phone or being part of the fellowship. Now, those are just, I think, some very obvious implications of that simple fact of parental responsibility. As I say, we shouldn't beat ourselves up that we think and know that that's an impossible task. But let's think about, finally, the reality of some of the steps that we can and could take to move some way down the path towards what we know to be the truth. And the first thing, I think, is always to get the church on board, to share the vision of what the role of Sunday school or the club you're involved in is as part of the bigger church. One of the wonderful things about listening to Tim this week has been hearing how his grand visions have become a reality because he's had the 100% support of his pastor, and having fought for it and worked for it and trained people, has the support of a leadership team and the parents and the kids. And that's wonderful, but it's also quite depressing if you happen to be in a church where actually your pastor doesn't quite think in the same direction as you, and the parents are a little bit hostile to the fact that you're running something which is focused on the Bible, and your fellow leaders are enthusiastic but aren't quite on message, and you know, if you push them too hard they would leave, and that would sink you, basically. And that's the reality, isn't it, for many people in many churches. If you know, if you happen to be in a church where everybody's on board, that is brilliant, but it's not where everybody's at. So making some move towards getting the church on board, to getting the basis of the ministry, the involvement of parents as part of the deal, is really important. The second thing I would say is this, that you let parents know what the deal is. We just had again, we talked about this on our little Sunday school team And but the reality of it is, a new lady's come to church. I suspect her husband's not a churchgoer. She's brought her 4-year-old and a baby, brought them on her own. And she said, I'd love to send my child to Sunday school. And I just spent 3 minutes explaining what the deal was. That's brilliant, and it's going to be fantastic to have her. We believe that what Sunday school is all about is a partnership between you and us in raising this child. And I explained what that meant. I didn't really necessarily explain the implications of it, but I made sure she understood that there was something that was expected of her, and that is the start of a relationship that I would hope to have opportunity at some stage in the future to use, whether that's for encouragement or training or involvement in some kind of way. And if you have something that's printed or a mission statement or something like that, it's helpful to have something that you can actually give to them. Do weekly activities that involve parents. That doesn't mean that you get the parents, one parent in a week, to help take them to the toilet or to help sweep up or snack the chairs after. What I mean by that is that very often the curricula that we use, the take-home activity is something which is so flimsy and rubbish it's disintegrated by the time it's made it through the car park or come out of the boot after they've got home. And it actually serves no function and isn't of sufficient quality to either hang up in a bedroom if it's supposed to be a mobile or a picture to put up on the wall. What we've worked out in the last year is choosing activities and crafts and other things which have some kind of function at home. So we did a series on Jesus from John, and one of the activities was a little just a little bit of cardboard, actually. We put a tea light on. Jesus is the light of the world. And when the parents came, we said to them, what we'd love you to do this week is, and it was quite nice, as Sunday school crafts go, it was quite pucker. We said to each of them, what we'd love you to do this week is every night at supper, put this on the table, light the candle before supper, and just say the verse, Jesus is the light of the world, with your child. And we told the kids too. I said, we said to them, every night this week when you go home, at supper time, we want you to remind your parents to light the candle and to say the verse. Remember this, Jesus is the light of the world. Now, who knows how many did it? But at least there is something which is practical and simple. Even a non-Christian parent could do it. And when the kid is up for it and encourages the parent to do it, it's all the more likely to happen. Get them sharing the teaching with the parents. Again, something we've been trying to work on in our Sunday school with our program, with our curriculum. It's not really built into the curriculum that we're using, so we're having to be a bit creative. In fact, I don't really know a curriculum that has this kind of aspect built into it properly. But for example, we did a program called The King, the Snake and the Promise, which is a Bible overview. You make a big banner, some of you might have done it, that's on a CD with lots of music in the bookshop out there. And it was about learning the story of the Bible from beginning to end. And after the main teaching session, we do the next bit of the banner, and a lot of the time in the session was about going over what the pictures meant and walking down the banner and explaining it, going over, oh, here's Abraham, and he was promised land, offspring and blessing, and this is David, and this was God's people in God's place and under God's king, and so on. And week by week, as the parents came in, I would take the children to the door and I'd say, look, I'd love your child to explain to you what we're doing. And they would take Dad over to the banner and walk down it, explaining what it was. And by the end of it, all the parents knew the presentation as well, because each week, repeatedly, children had been taking their parents down the line, explaining, repeating the teaching. And with the various crafts and activities we do, we repeat the story, whether it's the man being lowered through the roof and you're making some little thing on strings where he goes down. And, you know, the purpose of that isn't that they'd have a fantastic little model to play around with and get wrecked. It's so that they can repeat the story to you and get it into their minds. And when their parents come, I will simply say, look what Claire has made. Claire, can you tell the story to your mum using this? And little Claire has a go at it. And it's great, and mum knows it, and therefore it can all get reinforced. You're involving the parents, getting get the children sharing the teaching with the parents. Arranging appropriate contact points. Now, this may be simply that you organise a Sunday school party, or a Sunday school outing that the teachers, the parents go on, or a summer Sunday school barbecue, or something where you have contact time, or a parents' evening. How many of you have parents' evening for your Sunday school?
An open day.
An open day, right. Okay. It's a fantastic idea to have a parents' evening. Parents know the concept. They do it all the time. Parents' evening, where you go and talk about their child. You present some of the work you're doing in the evening. You do them regularly, don't you, at Dundonald?
Once a year.
Once a year. Have I been once or twice to that?
You've been once. You've invited many more.
I refuse to go. The wine isn't of sufficient quality vintage. And one of the things about those evenings is that you have the opportunity to encourage the parents to actually do their job, to actually teach their parents, because they, let me change that, we need lots of encouragement. Look, I know we publish fantastic Bible reading material for 7s to 11s. I don't know if you know XTB or Table Talk, which is a resource for getting parents reading the Bible with their children. We publish these not to make lots of money, because we don't make lots of money out of them, but because we're convinced that this is an important area that parents need help with and resource with. I'd like to tell you that every night I do XTB with all three children, and every morning at breakfast I open Table Talk and do a Bible thought with my children over breakfast. Doesn't happen. It goes well sometimes, I fall off the wagon other times. Sometimes it's going brilliantly with one child, at other times another child is highly resistant to it. Most of the time, the pressure on time in the household is so great, and mum and dad are so exhausted that it gets squeezed out. I need encouragement to do my job as a parent. I need help to do my job as a parent. And if I do, I suspect that most other parents do as well. So, setting up some kind of way of doing that, parents' evenings, training evenings, and so on, is a really good thing to do. There's one guy who does something which he calls Time for God, which is that I think three times a year he puts on a kind of children's activity thing on Sunday afternoon in the church. The parents come with them, the kids do activity for an hour, and the parents are trained and taught and helped. Some of it is practical parenting skills. Other of it is more helping them with the practicalities of teaching the Bible, praying with children, and so on. It's a simple idea, but something that we ought to be encouraging. Time's gone. These are just three slides from a very simple parents' evening that was done for a church local to us. And all we did was talk about this verse from Deuteronomy, and then talked about the fact that we've got to go for it. Parents, why don't you read the Bible together? It's not as hard as you think. I actually made a video of me doing table talk with my three kids at the table, which had food all over the place. Nothing worked quite right. Maggie kept making rude jokes. It was about praying in secret, and Maggie said, so I said, Maggie, where do you go to pray? I go to the toilet, she said. They didn't know I was videoing them. And she just kept repeating that she went to the toilet to pray. That was the whole thing. But I showed this in a church I went to. Not because I thought it was fantastic quality or anything, but I just thought, this is normal. And the number of blokes that came up to me afterwards and said, that was great, I could do that. It's just normal family life. And people need to get over the hump of doing it. As the verse says, as you walk and talk, encouraging parents to talk about God the Creator, God who's fantastically creative and wonderfully funny in the way he made the world, as you're going on a walk out together. On the road, in the car, when you're travelling places, what about putting a cassette on of talks or stories or Bible songs, and at bedtime, and then an encouragement to pray for the children. It's a very simple evening. The whole thing took about half an hour, that's all. No big pressure, just information and encouragement. Well, that's all I had to say. What time is supper? Half past. Anybody want to share any other suggestions that you might have from your experience on getting to grips with this area of children, parents, involvement? Yeah.
One thing I think that's quite useful to do with a church situation is to get church members praying for families or specific children, you know, and taking an interest.
Yeah.
So getting the church on board in that way too. Also getting teachers to have specific children that they pray for, so that there's a particular three or four that they particularly pray for and commit to praying for.
Yeah.
It's good to do that, I think, to support in that way.
Yeah. So that the whole thing is seen as a...
Parents then, is there anything particular I can pray for?
Yeah.
About their situation at school if you don't know what it is.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
Thank you, and that's a wonderfully easy evangelistic intro for non-Christian parents, isn't it? Look, I don't know whether you believe in these things, but I believe in a God who loves us and answers prayer. I'd love to pray for you about that. Would you mind if I did that? No one's going to be offended by that, are they? Well, they might be, but if they are, they're in trouble. Anything else anyone would like to suggest? Yeah, Dave?
Can you... I might be being a bit lazy, but...
You've certainly got to have, you know, referral in place, haven't you? If you get involved with a family and it's a horror story, you've got to understand your area of competence. Bring in someone who's got more experience if you're involving, you know, marital problems or whatever. I think your point of contact is the child, and therefore talking about things like parenting is quite legitimate. And parents need all the help they can get on that, and actually want all the help they can get on it, mostly. Asked in the right way, there aren't many parents who would not be happy for some help on what to do with their kids. But I think, you know, that there are probably areas that you'd need to pass on if it got too tricky. Yeah.
And one thing my colleague tried to do is the 11-13, I haven't done it yet, is a parent forum. He aims to do it every 6 months, but it's been annually at the moment. And he gets all his teams in from the midweek clubs and the Sunday club.
Yeah.
And invites all the parents. He's just aimed at a church parent so far, but that's about 40 families.
Yeah.
Of that age. And gets them in. I know I've only been a long time, but for example, the first one he did, he just sort of explained a bit, but then he put the team members with parents of children of their age, so they got the team of And one of the things the parents just talked about then was their concern for their kids.
Yeah.
And the leaders talked about their concern, just whatever concern.
Yeah.
And prayed together. I know parents like filled in index cards and all sorts of things. It was really, really positive.
Mm.
And from that, actually, it helped Dave, my colleague, know sort of just a few things he was mulling over on, like development and ministry, even.
Yeah.
Oh, the parents really want this, and I've been thinking about it, and it helped that. But it really did sort of show to the parents that we're interested in their input as well. So I'm looking to do something similar on a regular basis as well.
Thank you. I think that builds all kinds of bridges, doesn't it? And the communication is terribly important because it virtually doesn't happen. You write letters to give parents to take home, but they never read them. So I don't. I think the only thing I'd say there is that whatever you take on, you've got to make sure it's sustainable. Because it is it's an open book, isn't it? Once you start getting involved with people and their family lives and so on. Good, we need to go. Let's pray together. Father, thank you that you put us into families. And thank you for our own parents and for all that they gave to us, are giving to us still. And we thank you, Lord, for the children in our groups. We pray for each one of them, Lord, that you'd help us to see how we can help them and their parents to grow in the fear and knowledge of the Lord. In Jesus' name, amen. Average 2 out of 10, 5 out of 10.
For the seminar?
Yeah.
Which helps? Oh, just give them on, just
Yeah.
Good simple reminders to, okay, what we're going to do about that.
No, good.
Thank you. Really helpful. Yeah, just reminding me. I've got to make a list of things I need to do. Go home and make a few out of on that session. So. And Christ didn't emphasize husband and wife.